Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my absolute pleasure to have as my guest, Rebecca Imhoff. Rebecca Imhoff is a personal trainer, wellness coach, online educator, wife, and mom of two teenage girls. Having faced her own personal mental and emotional challenges throughout her life, Becky knows that living well doesn't begin and end with physical health. Becky believes that nurturing your mental and emotional health is equally as important, and just like physical health, also requires a tailored, personalized, and consistent approach in order to be effective. As a personal trainer, Becky has always loved helping her clients reach their fitness goals. But what really excited her was knowing that she was helping people to move forward and overcome their challenges. She created Incorporated Wellness so that she can support and enable more people to enhance their lives on their journey to better health, wellness, and happiness. Her online courses and programs have been designed to deliver an effective and affordable learning experience. Becky's one-to-one coaching delivers an extra level of support and encouragement for anyone who is looking for a more personalized experience. Becky, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. It is my absolute pleasure to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. What a lovely introduction. I'm really, really glad to be here with you.
And you have a lovely accent. And if you want to tell our viewers and listeners where you're from, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. I'm from the UK, so I'm from east of England. I'm about 70 miles kind of northeast of London. London's always the point at which people tend to know in England. So I live outside the capital. I live in the countryside, which I absolutely love.
Yeah, where I live in the States, we live in a very rural, probably what you would consider to be a country-like atmosphere. We love it. It's just very quiet living, but yet we're accessible to stores and other things that we need to be accessible to. So it's just a great balance. It's very quiet, it's very peaceful, and it's very restful, which as I get older, I appreciate more and more. So,
me too. I'm getting older and I appreciate those things more and more. Yeah, I absolutely love that.
So, but anyway, let's get right down to it. Tell our listeners, Becky, about the experiences that have shaped your life path.
So I would say the most prominent thing for me is something I went through last year was a real game changer. And, becoming a mum is obviously huge, and becoming part of my own family is a massive thing that happened. My girls are teenagers now. So that was like my number one thing that really shaped and changed my life. But then more recently, I had a medical challenge that I underwent nearly a year ago now, actually. When I get to the date on which it happened, I'm going to celebrate that date, because I called that date chapter two of my life, because I nearly died. On the 12th of March, I had a seizure in the middle of the night, completely unexpected seizure, which woke me up out of my sleep. I was actually having a sleepover with my daughter in our downstairs lounge. I don't know if you call them lounges, in the TV room, when we were waiting for my husband and eldest daughter to come back. They'd been traveling for a couple of days, and they came home and they went, we greeted them. They were so tired from traveling, they went up to bed, and we went to sleep. And then in the middle of the night, my left hand started twitching, and it woke me up in the week previous to that, I'd already started feeling some numbness in my hand, through my arm and then up to my shoulder. And I'd gone and had some tests done in the A&E, emergency department, I think you call it. And they didn't know what it was. And they just said, you know, if anything changes or gets any worse, then come back. I'm not a worrier and I'm a very positive thinker. So I just thought, you know, it's probably nothing and it will resolve itself. Little did I know that in the middle of the night on the, 2 o'clock in the morning on the 12th of March, that I'd be woken up out of my sleep by my left hand through up to my face, convulsing and having a seizure. At the time, I didn't even call it a seizure. At the time, I was like, what is this? I don't know. I wake my daughter up. I was, Jasmine, wake up, wake up. Mummy's not very well. You need to call me an ambulance, which is no 14-year-old wants to hear in the middle of the night. And it's very surprising and shocking for her. So I just told her, go and get daddy. So luckily he was home that night and he phoned me an ambulance. And even though it was category one, so like the top level of importance, they said it could be 60 to 90 minutes. They just couldn't give us a time. And then when I heard that, my left hand side of me was convulsing so much that it was actually impacting my breathing. So at that point, you know, this was all within minutes, within 5 minutes. By that point, I was actually struggling to breathe. And at that point, I didn't know whether I was going to be able to carry on getting air into my lungs. So for me, there was twice within that very short window of time, within 15 minutes, in between being in that first stage of convulsions and not knowing what was going on to getting actually to hospital. It ended up putting me in the car and taking me to hospital. You know, they all got me in and took me there. It took us like 10, 15 minutes to get there. But there was twice within that period of the time that I really call it on the edge of life. Some people call it, what do they say, in between life and death, or I don't know what the term is that a lot of people use, but I call it the edge of life. I literally felt like I was staring a different route, you know, ending my life right then. I thought this could be it. So that was a very major thing, very unexpected major thing that happened a year ago that really has now shaped and changed me in a very unexpected way. Then, you know, I never would have thought, you know, this time last year, if someone had told me that's what you're going to go through, I think I would have been completely scared, and B, I don't think I would have thought I would have gone through it and managed and dealt with it the way that I did.
That had to be just an incredibly scary experience. Did the doctors at all tell you what caused it? Did they have any type of diagnosis for you? Did they give you any clarity in terms of why you went through those type of physical changes and trauma?
Well, really, there's been months. I'm still undergoing testing now, but there's been months and months of different, not conclusions as such. To begin with, I was given a diagnosis because where I was having this seizure, they took me in and stabilized me, got my breathing under control. And I just remember they must have given me some kind of drug and some anti-seizure, which I'm on now, anti-seizure medication. And they must have given me either sedatives or something, because I just remember maybe it was just the trauma of everything that had happened, that everything became a bit hazy. I remember being lifted onto a scanner, a big man lifting me onto a scanner. And then I remember the next thing was a dark-haired female doctor telling me, your scan results are back and you have 2 brain tumors. So that was the second shocker. So the first one was not being able to breathe. And then that was the piece of information that was like, oh, okay. And she told me privately and she said, do you want me to tell your family? And I said, yeah. They were right outside the curtain, right outside. I said, yeah, just tell them straight away. And they got the news. And obviously, as you can imagine, there was a lot of tears, a lot of cuddles, a lot of upset. And this all happened within like 3 hours of when I first had that first seizure, probably 2 hours, actually, probably shorter period of time. So that was what I was told. And I went on to have my options and I had brain surgery. 2.5 weeks later, I came home on medication to see what options were available. So I went to a specialist center in the UK in London to go and have brain surgery. But when I first was told I had, I was in hospital for a few days, and I had a cancer nurse come to me and say, this is presenting as metastatic cancer. So it's bleeding, it's swollen, and elsewhere within your body, we're going to do lots of scans to find out the primary cause. This looks like the secondary sign of cancer, and you'll find it. We'll find it elsewhere within, but it's okay because it looks like it's stage one. There's lots we can do, but all this conversation that was going on. But even with that conversation that was going on, I'd already decided on that first night when all my family went home and I went out to a high observation unit, I'd already decided in that moment that what had physically happened to me, I couldn't change. So I accepted that. But what I knew was emotionally and mentally, I now had a choice as to how I experienced whatever was ahead of me, whether that was, a diagnosis of this is terminal, whether that was a diagnosis of we're going to treat and then we're going to give you radiotherapy and chemo or whatever it was. I knew, this is why I call it chapter two, because that was day one for me, a drawing of a line in the sand. Day one for me now as an individual, not as a mum, not as anybody else, but me as an individual, as I came into this world, that was me again, almost, starting all over again as an individual, as a mature individual, to be able to decide, okay, this is the reality, but physically this has happened, mentally and emotionally, I now get to choose how I experience this next stage of my journey and however long I had to live. And I was very, very determined in that period of time that however long I did have to live, I was going to live differently than what I had so far.
Talk a little bit more about living differently. What has this experience done to change your priorities, your values, your outlook on life and the world? What has changed since this has all happened for you?
Yeah, I take back to that first night when I knew I was stable. I had the call button because in between like that first seizure and then having another scan and a couple of, I had a few more little seizures and I was being medicated, but I felt then, compared to when I couldn't breathe or I was scared for my life, I felt like I was in a safe place because I knew the nurses were close. I was in a place where they could attend to me quickly. So I felt like I was in a place of safety so that I was and then able to address and think and process. And I thought, that was a lot that I just went through. That was like unexpected and a lot to go through. But I knew that through my experience of training to be a coach, through different books I've read, through podcasts I listen to, I'm a massive, massive personal growth fan and I just love learning and developing. And I just feel like there is just an expansion of knowledge and resources for us to tap into and that we can really equip ourselves to be able to deal with things, in different ways if we empower ourselves. So it felt like a really empowering moment, an opportunity for me. And I observed what I was thinking during that period of time. I just closed my eyes and I just kind of went over what had happened in that last kind of 6 hours or so. And I just thought, now I can observe my thought. I closed my eyes. I could see what I was thinking and I could choose. I knew I had a choice whether I accepted them as my thought and I carried on with them just as whatever was coming to me, being reactive, just absorbing them and believing them. Or I could see those thoughts and I could decide what to do with them. And for me, I saw there was a vision that came up in my mind. It was of a bridge, but this bridge was turned upside down and it went through a midnight blue river, almost metallic, like mirror-like. And I knew that things like this didn't ever happen to me before. I would never have considered myself like a spiritual person or even like someone who sees visions, and not at all, not that I've ever been aware of. But I knew that this river just represented just thoughts that were flowing, being accepted, but also negativity and just things that just suffering and negativity.
But this bridge was turned not so that you'd go over the water, it was turned so you'd go into the water. And I could just see myself just teetering on the edge of it, walking, just starting to walk in. And I just realized that actually the bridge doesn't have to go down into the water. You can turn it over. And the moment I realized that, I could see a cream, smooth bridge going over and above the water. So I wasn't even touching that. And then it was me, I saw then just me standing on this bridge and observing my thoughts as they came to me. And then one by one, I could decide and question, is that a thought, a useful thought to carry on? Do I want it? And if it wasn't, I could just drop it into the river and it would just carry on flowing by. That was one of the most powerful things that happened, you know, realizing that you can be empowered just simply by understanding that you can observe a thought, decide whether you want to. It's almost like an option. You know, this is an option of what I can take on. Is it useful? Is it something that is sitting right with me at this moment in time and how I want to move forward? Because I'd already decided I want an optimistic outlook on this, because otherwise, you know, it's a pessimistic outlook. And however long I have left, I certainly don't want to live it being negative or pessimistic or wasting it. And going back to your original question about how things have changed for me, I think when I was short of breath and I thought this could be it, I thought I've been here 44 years. And I'm not ready to die. Like, you know, I felt robbed. I felt like it shouldn't be my time. But then I realized that actually nobody's guaranteed any period of time. And it's about the quality of life, not the quantity of years. And I realized that, you know, I feel really blessed because I have a wonderful family. I have a roof over my head. We have food on our plate. I have all my basic needs met. But I've caused a lot of personal suffering in my life just through stressing about the silly little things that, you know, not different to anybody else. I don't, you know, don't have any mental health problems or anything like that. And it's just not appreciating things, not soaking in the moment, being distracted in my mind, or not, you know, showing real love and just, you know, even like family. And it's a bit like, oh, you know, I've got to do this and this and this before they come over. And, you know, just instead of like being grateful and appreciating and making the most of things, I haven't done that in my 44 years. And I take personal responsibility for that. But I just knew that I didn't. The key for me for changing my way forward was to go forward with optimism and gratitude in every single way that I could. So, in answer to your question, you know, is that really has been something for me that I decided within that period of time that I was going to move forward with, and it brought me huge peace. I literally went through five and a half weeks from when I was first told through to having surgery, through to my biopsy results, when there was huge uncertainty, when I was told this is cancer, this is metastatic, this is, you know, advanced, it's coming from elsewhere within your body. Everything that I was being told, I chose not to take on board until I got the fact of the reality, but I was not going to suffer. So I'm moving forward with optimism and gratitude and aligning my thoughts to that. Gave me so much peace like I've never felt before. You know, sustained peace was awesome.
And it sounded like that transformation began when you were close to death, when you saw the vision of the bridge mm-hmm. and the water, and you were visualizing negative thoughts and just dropping those into the stream and just letting it flow mm-hmm. away. My life-altering moment was the transition of my daughter Janine from the physical plane to the spiritual plane over 20 years ago. And that caused me to really rethink my priorities, my values, my beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I think that same process is undertaken with somebody who has a close brush with death like yourself. You mm-hmm. come back with it really having a greater appreciation for life. I think you're right. I think we do have a choice in terms of how we see experiences that have happened to us. For me, I had to wallow in the muck of my grief with my daughter before I could wallow through it. But then I had to make a decision. Do I want to live or do I want to exist?
Yeah. I think you said perspective, isn't it? It's just perspective shift and a choice. Like you said, mm-hmm. you know, we have free will and we have choice, don't we? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. not everybody has, we have so much choice and so much luxury of choice. especially in the Western world. We don't realize until you start to see actually what some people have to go through and the freedom that we have that actually a lot of people in the world don't have. They don't have the choice like we do, and we take it for granted. But it was a real game changer. But I knew that actually the challenge, I mean, you know, I had a real luxury of having had that experience. I see the reason I use the word luxury is because it was such a valuable life lesson. And, you know, I'm extremely lucky because I came through it and had a positive outcome. They were so convinced of what was going to come back to me, and I didn't have what they were convinced was going to come back to me. And, you know, even to this day, I went for a EEG the other day to do with my brain waves, and I've got a on the 18th of March, so not long from now, I've got a test that looks at the very, very fine blood vessels in my brain to look for a cause. Because they said it's like you've been hit over the head, like you've had a head trauma. But I haven't been hit over the head. Post-surgery, I had another bleed at the back of my brain as well, which they didn't know how or why. So, yeah, you know what? There's been a lot of uncertainty and mystery around it, but I just have not allowed myself to go into, because uncertainty can be so unsettling. And part of my way to move forward with this, to avoid any unnecessary mental suffering, I've chosen to always acknowledge when something feels unsettling, and to acknowledge it and just say, okay, something doesn't feel right. And this is how I'm feeling right now. Okay, why am I feeling like this? Where's the thought that now has led to this feeling? And, you know, so much of that journey has been about accepting what is. And before I was ill, I'd read twice. I often have to read books a couple of times, maybe three times, to really digest them. And I seem to learn something new every single time. I think we don't retain the information, and there's new lessons to be learned. But I read a book. There's a couple of books I read that I found hugely beneficial during this period of time. One was Loving What Is by Katie Byron. She's known as Byron Katie. And that is about, her book is really about accepting the reality. Whatever reality is, the facts of a situation, accepting it. And you prevent so much unnecessary suffering when you can just simply do that. When you can just go, okay, these are the unchangeable facts of this situation. And you avoid so much unnecessary pain and suffering, because things that you can't change and that are outside of your control, if you can accept that, then you can really focus on what is within your control. And another book that I read really randomly, just picked it up out of a thrift store, a charity store, as we called it, was the Biology of Belief, about what you believe and your mindset state, and, you know, your mindset affecting your physical reality. There's a couple of people I've got around me who believe that I healed myself just through not entering into, even when I was hearing it's this, it's that, I was like, okay, well, I just wait for the facts of the situation. And that leads me on to another thing that really, really helped me during this period of time, was I created out of that original bridge moment and seeing the thoughts and knowing that those, does that align with gratitude? That I feel hugely grateful to still be here. That feels really good to me. Optimism of thinking, I want to move forward in the best way possible. And that needs to have an optimistic outlook for me, and aligning my thoughts with that. Do they fit with that optimistic, gratefulness that I feel? And if they don't, okay, they go into the river and they just flow on by. If they align, then I keep them and I can build on them and I can start to introduce, you know, like the neurological pathways, which way am I going to go with this experience, this brand new experience, chapter two, drawing the line in the sand, moving forward. You know, that felt like a real luxury to me, to have that new experience, to be able to set, you know, for myself, and a privilege to have that just for myself. And I think to being able with that, I just chose to focus on a time in the future beyond what my current reality was, accept the reality, but With the optimistic outlook, I moved myself forward. I chose to go about 5 months into the future. And every time that something started to feel scary to me, or I started to feel my body react in a stress-triggered way, I would align my thinking with optimism and feeling, you know, bringing back to that gratefulness of just still being able to breathe, the simplicity of getting air into my lungs. First thing we do when we're born, they want to see us breathe. You know, the last thing you want to see someone do when you feel like they might be losing their life is to stop breathing. So just the simplicity of breathing, and then, you know, being grateful for that. But then the optimism was all about future thinking. 5 months from now, when all this whole moment of time has passed, when this mystery thing that happened to me when I was 44 years old, that turned out not to be cancer, but knowing in reality that if it was, I could face that because I could accept the reality of any situation as it comes to me. But then having this really positive future where I would be speaking, the future I chose was that I would have moved past this physically, and I'd be speaking to people on podcasts. I'd be writing about my story. I'd be sharing it with whoever I could share it with to help other people. And just that, you know, the purpose of being able to help other people was hugely beneficial within this. Like, just thinking this is a teaching experience for me to be able to pass on knowledge and to be helpful for other people in whatever situation they find themselves in. It doesn't have to be the same as mine. It could just be stress. It could be, you know, uncertainty. It could be whatever it is. But, you know, being able to accept reality and then create this vision of a future that makes you feel better than what the current situation is, give you hope. If you faith for the future. Not words that I ever thought would be coming out of my mouth over a year ago. I didn't think I'd be talking about faith and hope and visions and, you know, so, you know, it has been such a gift to me.
You know, I think it's great that you have adopted that outlook on your situation and have used it to better your own mindset, to better your perspective, and to want to share that with the world. The other thing that you brought up that I think is extremely important is how our thoughts can impact our physical health. And the fact that you've adopted that positive mindset, I think has, from what I can hear you say, has allowed you to keep, you know, optimal physical health under the circumstances.
And
I think it also proves that we can become the co-creator of our own reality in conjunction with the universe. And there's also another book that I found very helpful. That's by Dan Condren. It's called Permanent Healing. And he's a doctor that talks about how our specific thoughts impact our physical well-being. And he has a glossary of medical ailments ranging from psoriasis to liver failure. And he talks about thoughts, he calls them diseased, and it's hyphenated thoughts that contribute to the ailment, and what type of ways that we can modify our thoughts and what that healthier thought looks like in order to influence physical health. And I really think that there's a lot to be said for that mind-body connection. If our thoughts are healthy, we feel physically healthy. If they're not healthy, the body carries that.
Yeah. I think there's, you know, in line with what you're saying there as well, the thing that comes to my mind and recalling from my experience, victim mentality. And I don't mean that in the sense of pick yourself up, what you're talking about, you're not a victim. I don't mean it like that. What I mean is, you know, that awful things happen to people. That is the reality of life. People go through challenges. People go through things that they just don't deserve. And, you know, life sometimes can be cruel. We can get dealt a bad hand of cards, and it's not easy. And there's trauma, there's different things for people to go through. So I'm not talking about those situations as such, but in day-to-day life, I would say, you know, I hold my hands up, and my family noticed as well because I've spoken to them about it. So much of my former suffering, where I was, you know, stressed out unnecessarily, just a number of different things, unnecessary suffering that I was bringing upon myself because of my thinking, was victim mentality, so much of it. And people who know me, especially who know me of being through through what I've been through recently, they're like, you're the least victim mentality person ever. Look at how you went through what you went through. And I agree, in this situation, I absolutely was not a victim. But this was a very new situation for me that, again, I say I had the privilege of starting at the very beginning and choosing how I went through it. It was completely new. I had no frame of previous experience or previous, just previous experience of it to revert back to a way of thinking from before. There was no default pattern in my brain already set. So I could set that pattern of how I wanted to move forward. I believe I was creating my own thinking and neurological pathways for the whole process. However, my victim mentality for the 44 years before that started from when I was younger. In some way, shape or form, at some stage of a young version of me, I took on victim mentality in a very, very subtle way. I didn't mean to, but I did. You know, things were happening to me. Poor me, or it's only me, you know, or why is this always happening to me? And not even in a major way. Mm-hmm. People, you know, my former clients, I had did personal training for over 8 years, and they would be like, you're such a positive person, this and that. It wasn't a front. I absolutely was that. But in my thinking, in my personal life, I now can look back and think, oh my goodness, I was such a victim. I was such a victim. I had everything, but still I was such a victim in my thinking. It's so subtle that you won't even realize because you just think it's part of who you are. And it's not until you shine a light on it that you realize, oh my goodness, I'm playing out a victim mentality in my life here. And it's not helpful. It's it's really making me suffer. So, you know, there's so many things that have come about as a result of this whole experience, not just feeling extremely grateful for this second chance of life, which I really do firmly believe I have now had. You know, I had life-saving surgery, as the surgeon said. And if I hadn't got to hospital on that night, I don't know that I would still be alive. I think I could have gone into cardiac arrest definitely with the way I was going. The challenge has been not the huge uncertainty and the actual trauma physically of what I've been through. The challenge, and I knew it was going to come. I spoke to the person who was coaching me for a while and I said, I know what's coming. I'm now moving out of this period of time where physically I'm getting better, because the whole brain surgery, everything, it impacted my ability to walk. My left-hand side, I still can't 100%. Someone could touch me on the arm and I wouldn't even realize they touched me. I haven't got 100% use in it. But so physically it has impacted me. It took me a time to rehab and get back into normal everyday life. Lots of things were very overwhelming to begin with. But I knew that the biggest challenge was going to be coming back into my life and getting back to normality, but then not going back to my default patterns of behavior of suffering from before when something happens and my default was like, oh, why is this happening to me? Poor me. Why am I the only one picking up the plate? Why does nobody else care about doing the washing? Why, you know, that I knew was going to be my biggest challenge actually out of everything.
You know, it's interesting as I was hearing you talk about this chapter of your journey, it was almost like the near death or close to death experience that you had almost was a catalyst for you looking at your past and saying, yeah, I used to be a victim and now I'm going to empower myself.
Yeah.
And I think so much of what we do, so much of what happens to us and the type of challenges, as you said, that we don't have any control over what we're going to experience, is that it really compels us to take a look at all aspects of our life and particularly our past and see exactly what can our past teach us. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like that event was almost a catalyst for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I call it a gift, because I firmly believe that I could have just cracked on with the rest of my life and never have had that realization and be suffering, but suffering that I'm bringing upon myself just through my thinking. The question then became not what is this, but how do I change this? So once I shone a light on it and I understood, I was saying like, okay, but how do I undo the patterns of thinking and the ways, my default ways of thinking and the suffering that I was bringing on myself before? And understanding that victim mentality, once that was highlighted to me, the first thing I did was bought a book, funnily enough, on victim consciousness. And that was just so enlightening. And then, you know, I really was so determined. I really, really wanted to crack this and change it. I was then came across Positive Intelligence, which is a platform online, and there's a test you can do on there. And funnily enough, victim is like one of my main saboteurs, along with control and something. What was the other one? Oh, hyperlogical. And I was like, oh, okay. And so that then came into my life. And then as a coach, I was able to go into it with another couple of coaches that I knew and do the course. And that was a fantastic course. And that for me has really, really helped me to undo so many patterns of behavior. I am not perfect. I am not perfect. However, I now am able to catch much quicker when I'm flipping into stress or suffering. And I'm like, okay. Or I'm being reactive. I'm like, okay, where did that come from? And now that I understand myself more, I now know the steps I have to take to help myself slip. I've come out of that way of thinking and just correct until I step away from it far enough to not have that as my default way of thinking. So, you know, it's that's been hugely powerful for me as well.
And for all those perfectionists out there, it's not about getting it 100% right. It's about becoming more and more aware of the relationship to yourself in the world and in the world around you. It's about excellence. It's excellence. It's not about perfection. It's about continuing to be and evolve to be the best version of yourself, whether it's in times of challenge or not times of challenge. So, and as someone who has struggled off and on with perfectionism most of my life, I can say that from as a personal lesson that I've learned from all of my challenges with that. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, how is all your mindset, your different mindset, your change in mindset, your revised mindset, however we want to take a look at this, how has that informed the coaching that you do with clients?
I think I now have a very, very clear, and this happened early on because I was still studying to be a coach when this happened, when I had my first seizure. I was 2/3 of the way through, but and I had a very thorough coaching course that I went on. And there's a certain amount of teaching that's done, and then practical assessments that you're assessed on. And then, you know, you get your feedback, you either pass or you don't pass. And there was two more assessments that I had to do towards the end of it to qualify. And I just thought, if I can do them, I'll do them. If I can't, I can't, because I had to be kind to myself during that period of time. And I produced two of the best coaching sessions I've ever done, because I was able to, this line between suffering and peace that had been drawn for me in that moment where I was ill and I could see, oh my goodness, I spent this much of my life suffering. And now I'm going into a period of peace because I'm not allowing anything that leads to suffering, these thoughts within my head. So in terms of coaching, when I now am working with somebody, it's almost like I see it. I see the line between the suffering and the peace. And, you know, with coaching, it's not about, with pure coaching, you don't give advice. You ask questions, incisive questions, and you help the person to become empowered. You go in partnership with them. And whatever they want to achieve, you know, 9 times out of 10, they have ideas of how to achieve what they want to achieve, but it's the mind that gets in the way, the beliefs that get in the way, it's the assumptions that get in the way. And as a coach, to be able to then, it's almost like I can see it, fit like physically see this line between, okay, this is what they want, and this is the thing that could be getting in the way. And I'm now so much better at asking the right questions to help them, not of what I think their suffering is, but to help them find within themselves, what's stopping me here? Because ultimately my coaching really comes down to helping people to find life, satisfaction, inner peace, contentment. That's really, you know, because for me, that moment of quality of life is about living, you know, getting to the end of your life and going, oh, I'm so happy with my lot, whenever that is, you know, whether that's 50, 60, 20, whatever it is, like, I've lived my life well, I've been satisfied, I'm fulfilled. And so when I'm working with people, that is always, I think, in the back of my mind, that ultimately, you know, it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. And that now is kind of what I've become really skilled at. And I can get to that point with people very quickly. I'm told in a way that is very empathetic and comes across very kindly, because my motive is always really for the best for the person. Mm-hmm. And I'm always really mindful of how I speak to people with kindness. So I'd say that, you know, it's really enriched my, it's almost like a, I don't know, an extra sense that I feel like I now have that I didn't have before.
And I like the fact that you don't give advice, because advice can be disempowering no matter which way it goes. Because if you give me advice, Becky, and I take it, I'm going to credit you for my progress because you gave me the advice.
Yeah.
But if I take your advice and it doesn't work, then I'm going to blame you and I'm going to stay stuck.
I've become responsible. Yeah, I don't. And also, you know, you understand. You've got everything within you to know and make that informed decision for yourself. I don't know. You know, a good coach can coach someone on absolutely anything whatsoever. You don't need to be an expert on that field. You just need to help somebody, you know, in themselves to be able to be their own expert of whatever it is that they're, you are the expert on your life, whether you know it or not, you are the expert on your life.
And I think our job, whether it's as therapists or as coaches, is to plant those seeds and allow those individuals to harvest those seeds within their own value system and how they see fit. And the journey becomes empowering for the client, because they feel like they are the masters of their own universe. They're making their own choices, and we're just guiding that process. Give our listeners one or two takeaways from your life experiences that can help them transcend their own life challenges, Becky.
Yeah, I would say the first thing that springs to mind, and this springs to mind on a weekly basis for me, is that don't be afraid to dream and to, you know, want for something. I think often people keep things small because they're afraid that if whatever they dream for doesn't happen. But everything that you've been through in your life so far, you've dealt with. It might have caused heartbreak. It might not have been how you wanted, but you've dealt with everything so far. Otherwise you wouldn't be here right now. It doesn't necessarily have to be easy, but you've dealt with it. So you can deal with every reality as it comes to you. So, you know, dig deep and think, what do you want? If you're not happy right now, what would you love to happen? If your reality isn't how you want it to be, what do you really, really want to happen? And understand that, and just know that when that, you can deal with every step that comes along the way in terms of, you know, if that thing doesn't then happen, you can pivot and change and set something else. I would say that, you know, that kept me very strong through the period of time where I was being told everything was very bleak and I was going to be facing all these like horrific things, and that, you know, things didn't look good. You know, go on facts and reality wherever possible. So having faith and hope for your dream to come true, and know that you can deal with it, whatever does come, the reality at the time when it becomes that. I think that's huge. And, you know, gratitude, when you're grateful, there's not much else that can coexist alongside gratitude in terms of suffering. You can't feel angry when you're grateful. You can't feel sad when you're grateful. So, you know, I used to hear about the importance of gratitude. I used to try and practice gratitude. But It is such a powerful thing. You know, I can take myself back to that moment where I thought I couldn't breathe. whenever I need to access that, I can access that and go into a deep place of gratitude. And another thing that really helps me, if, you know, the majority of people wouldn't have had that experience, is to think about the things that that you really treasure and value within your life. And then this is going to sound like a harsh way to do this, but it is really effective. And then if you imagine a reality without those things, how you would feel, it really helps you to then tap into like the almost the feeling of like a deeper level of gratitude for still having those things in your life or those people or whatever it is. And then that can really, really bring that around within you. And the importance of that is that you realize that the wealth and the abundance that you already have, because it's very easy to be looking, especially when you're going through something and wanting a different reality as something that, you know, everything to just change in an instant, and life isn't like that. But if you can tap into what you already do have and what you're already grateful for, that can really transcend you into a different place, because all of this stuff really does start and end in your mind. And then transcend into a feeling and your reality and your experience, rather than having to create the conditions outside of yourself for you to be okay. You can do that within yourself without the outside conditions having to change at all. You can really find a deep level of peace and satisfaction and fulfillment within yourself. You can create that through just that simple choice of just tapping into what matters to you, what you already have, and how rich your life already is. And that can really change everything for you. Just keep doing it and building it up as a practice and changing your pathways. And I would say that, you know, that really is quality of life. And that really is, it trumps everything. And that is everything.
Yeah, and what I hear, the underlying themes of your message is that empowerment and gratitude are two very powerful aspects of our lives to embrace. And the other piece is that we need to always show grace to ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and just understand that we've done the best that we could do, we are doing, given the hand of the cards that was dealt. So thank you mm-hmm. for all of that, Becky. Last question. How can individuals get in touch with you, contract for your services, find out more about what you do?
So the best way to do it, all my socials, everything is all on my website, and you can contact me directly from my website. It's www.incorporatedwellness.com. So incorporatedwellness.com.
And your website link will be in the program notes, so that people will be able to get in touch with you very easily. Becky, thank you so much for spending time with me this morning. And it was just an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. And I hope we can do this again sometime.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking to you.
Thank you. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.